Good evening, and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program here on March 28, 2013. I'm your host, David Katzmeier, coming to you live as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific, coming to you live from New York tonight. Tonight is a very special night because we're looking at the cycles of the heavens and how they affect the events of our lives, namely the cycles of astrology. Our guest is William Stickevers, astrological advisor and consultant. William Stickevers has been a practicing astrologer since 1990, currently practicing in New York City. He is well-versed in both classical and modern astrology and has lectured for the National Center for Geocosmic Research, American Federation of Astrologers, and in Europe and Japan. William is an active member of the NCGR and the Society of Astrologers. William began studying astrology in 1996 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, with Vera Waltz, and he continued his astrological training with Robert Cook in New York. He has trained with well-known figures such as Jim Lewis, Alfie Laveau, Robert Zoller, Christopher Warnock, who is of the Renaissance Astrology and Astrological Magic, and he has studied astrocardiography. William's clients include investors, business owners, entrepreneurs, astrologers, physics, professional performing artists, fashion designers, and doctors. He enjoys working with clients who are committed to personal growth and spiritual development. So he's had a lot of practice in the applied field of astrology and what it means for the person seeking these questions. Ladies and gentlemen, I first met William back on January 24th here in New York when he, I, and a third were the co-presenters of an event at the Meadow Center in New York that was hosted by Alan Steinfeld of New Realities. That's newrealities.com. He put on a special program titled New Beginnings, Cycles, Structure, and Rhythms, and the Evolution of Consciousness. So the vetting process of asking William to come on was the joy of live experience, sitting next to him, listening to him answer questions to interested audience members after they listened to him talk. That's because he integrated things from history, from different fields, from Mayan culture, from physics, from astrology to biology and what have you. And he had a wonderful way of putting them together, not as a salad, but as a means of supporting one supporting the other. And we began to see the interconnected world of cycles within cycles manifest in the various fields around us. With that in mind, I went up to him, as I did with Don Conroe, our other speaker that night, who was wonderful in the world of music and gong, healing, and so forth. And I've asked them both to be guests, and what a privilege. Don Conroe, you'll find in the archives. William Stickevers, I'm very pleased, is with us tonight. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome William to the show. William, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Well, William, thanks for joining us and continuing the study here a little bit. William, I'd like to know a little bit about you, if you will. Would you tell us, you're going to bring in some light, illumination on how the world around us and beyond around us affect our lives, but what was it that drew you to this in the first place?
Well, it was just simply I was going to college back in the mid-'80s, and a friend of mine insisted that I see an astrologer because he just went for an astrology reading, and he played back the tape of the consultation. It was very revealing. Many of the issues that he was struggling with, the astrologer had no idea of, was very much the central core problems he was facing over that period. For 2 years, and he also made some predictions that did come to pass that made an impression on me. So I figured, you know, it was well worth following up to get a reading with this gentleman who ended up being a teacher of mine a number of years later. And from that point, I started studying. It was just a side pursuit as I was pursuing my studies in classical music in Philadelphia. And then before you know it, I got in I was doing readings for $30 a pop as a college student, paying my rent, and it took off from there. I got an office by 1991, and then moved into the city and started reading for lots of people in the entertainment industry at that time in the early 90s and mid 90s, and then I began going further with it with software development, working with Astrological Institute of Research, where I got another degree in computer software programming, so I could develop more of the capability of astrology for real-world applications, as well as the applications that's used primarily today with spiritual and psychological counseling, which is really what my background was. And then later on, you know, doing that, I got into financial astrology and much more of what we call business astrology of elections, where we would assess a business or a particular venture, and then we look at ideal times to implement certain aspects, keystone events, or projects to meet the, you know, to make it profitable, to meet those outcomes. And that was very successful. That got me into NLP. I integrated the NLP aspect of it as well. I worked with the Tony Robbins Foundation for a number of years in their coaching program. So that fine-tuned my ability to help provide clients with solutions that not only work for them based on a horoscope, but using NLP techniques in NLP and having a background in Jungian psychology to really give them effective solutions that they could implement and see some quick changes in their life, even if they could not completely control the situation or the crisis that they were in, and give them a perspective of what was going on, the meaning behind some of the suffering and discomfort, and what game changes needed to happen in order for them to be put back into the path of individuation. And that's the big issue today that I see. The problem now is that most people feel they're off their path of individuating based on their sense of their higher self, what's known today as the higher self, or their daimonic calling. And I believe that's really the focus of what I do, besides all the forecast and projection technology that I helped develop and worked on with Alfie Lavoie and various other astrologers. And then later on, I got into astrological magic. And that's actually developing, encapsulating planetary energies at a proprietous moment using particular objects. And then where those objects over a period of like 60 to 90 days or longer will invoke certain processes in a person's psyche, in a person's life, to jumpstart or reset them in a particular direction with a desired outcome, which is a very effective tool that I use, not quite a bit, especially more so with my Asian clients. And that's how I got very much to doing work in Japan, doing astrological readings, doing astrological talismans, and doing a lot of business consulting in Japan and Tokyo. In fact, I have a Tokyo office now. And that all started up around the late 90s, early 2000s, and now it's going pretty well.
Indeed. And so you have an integrated experience from time, culture, and region. You've brought in the old studies that go back to the Chaldeans, as far as we know. And you've used modern tools and technology with computer programs that allow us to have new tools to deeper understand old wisdom. And then you're working with the individual on the personal level because you have an understanding from your education and experience in psychology so that you can help that person as an individual at that time assimilate what's going on. And even if they can't necessarily change the all the influences that may be going on in their lives around them, they can have a perspective, as you say, and understand it. And just merely understanding that something like, for instance, might be a temporal crisis is going to put a person at ease, not to feel neurotic, not to feel that they've caused it. Know that things change, and change can be beneficial. So you were practicing in New York. You have an office in Japan. my goodness. Now, how do you normally work with people? Do they come to you at the office, or do you work with people in group? Are you usually one-on-one? How, what's your mainstay of delivering the understanding and the benefits of what you learn so that they can do something with it in their lives, William?
Well, you know, with the introduction of Skype and other interactive technologies, GoToMeeting, and such, it's very easy today. It doesn't really matter where you're located now. I could be in New York and doing work
That's
in Tokyo
right.
and vice versa. In fact, when I'm in Tokyo, I have clients calling me or needing, you know, some internet interventionary advice and counsel. So it really doesn't matter. I mean, the only thing at this point in terms of having an office is someone who's able to answer a phone call or be able to process it, a transaction, and dealing with that within within that particular country. So I'm actually looking now to other countries to do work, to do further work in, especially now that the financial crisis is starting to spread. And that's one of the things I didn't mention earlier, that back in 2006, 2007, I was really challenged and motivated to take a look at the larger mundane cycles, mundane meaning world cycles, geopolitical mm-hmm. trends, financial trends, not just from the standpoint of profit, but the standpoint of how markets work, what influences them. And from there, I started detecting a systemic crisis was on the horizon. Mm-hmm. And that has been a big focus of my work, especially as I got introduced to people who were very knowledgeable about 2012 and and the convergence of various other astrological systems all occurring within a very small time frame. And so, you know,
and you're
point,
referring, of course, not just to the end of the Mayan calendar, but there were a lot of Native American stories that had convergence. There are some interpretations of Hopi prophecies that are there. There was going into the age of Aquarius. We could go on and on. And what a confluence of transitions happening at the same funnel point. And and you've studied many
correct.
Different schools of thought.
Yeah, there's many different days. The cardinal climax of 2010, many astrologers were writing about that back in the early 90s. There's the Barbell Cyclic Index shift that began to take a precipitous downfall, decline starting in 2000, which will bottom in 2022. We could talk about that mm-hmm. later. It was also mm-hmm. at that time, we're also seeing the Mayan end date, the beginning of the Mayan fifth age of the sun. And we're also seeing some other cycles, as you just mentioned, and the Chinese cycles. The Chinese astrologers also have their mundane system. So, yeah, there's a convergence of different long-range systems, very, very long-range cycles that are all converging together around this time, around this period, that are indicative, according to what we can see as far as we go back in history, of a systemic, what I have called, or Stanislav Grof would call, a collective psycho-spiritual death rebirth of civilization. Yes. And the last one we saw, we can go back in our earliest records, was around 3000 B.C. And that was about the time when all the pyramids around the world were being built. And there seems to be evidence now, compelling evidence, that there was a civilization prior, right? But that civilization, or most of it, has gotten wiped out, or, you know, maybe due to possibly ice age or self-destructed, or, you know, there's all different theories. But regardless, there was a most of what we call civilization today starts around the time of the fourth Mayan calendar, and the fourth age of the sun. And then that just ended December 21st, 2012, when we begin the fifth age.
Yes.
So we're seeing a major paradigm shift underway.
It could very well be. The long count of the Mayan calendar is about 5,125 years long. You go back to that time, and that is the dawn of major things, and which is manifest today in the remaining pyramids and so forth. Folks, we're going to be taking calls here a little bit later on. You can call in and ask William a question or contribute to the show at area code 347-884-9593. That's 347-884-9593. And you might want to check out his site in the meantime while you're listening to the show. His site is at williamstickevers.com. William, his last name is spelled STICKEVERS.com. William Stickevers. And we're going to be talking about the cycles of astrology, how they affect our lives, and many different schools of thought that we've been working in. Do you have, we got to remember, William, that the market moves as a result of human behavior. It's a result of what's happening in the market. That's what we build. We have ups and downs, cycles in our production and so forth. Then with all the speculation, derivatives, options, and everything like that, there is the action, reaction, response that's going on. There's sometimes flywheels effect, and so it's all psychologically based, and if our psychology or psyche, as it were, is influenced by the heavens around us, it's best we know. So when you're looking at astrology, you're not just working for an individual. You're looking at society. You're looking at short and long terms of history, and you're able to see these things on many different strata at one time, all moving in rhythm. Is that correct, William?
That's correct. So I can get a good idea of where things are moving. And like, for example, what I'm working with many of my clients right now is wealth preservation measures, because based on looking at the planetary cyclic indexes of the past going all the way back to 1500, this is a period more about consolidation and involution and contraction. So wealth preservation, where we see periods of deflation and inflation simultaneously occurring, like you see that now today with real estate was deflating and then we had inflation with food or gasoline and with our currency, right? So this is very common, these periods where you see both those factors at play, which make it very difficult to know, you know, where to preserve your wealth, where to make investments, and that's very much the underpinnings behind a lot of the social revolution that we see spreading and developing as well. So I help my clients look at some I understand the overall cycle, and then we can bring it down to their personal chart, their personal life. And see what their level of risk, their tolerance for risk in markets, and come about with an appropriate type of wealth preservation investment portfolio based on the transits or planetary cycles to their chart.
Yes.
And that works in accordance with their timeline and their and an investment strategy that works within the particular locality that they're in. For example, many of my Japanese clients are very adverse to investing outside of Japan, which is a problem now. And so we need to find, you know, we need to find a happy medium where Americans are willing to invest anywhere as long as they can make a profit. But a big problem now is that it's very hard to make a profit when dilution of currency is happening in almost every sector of the world. In fact, every sector of the world. So, you know, it's a little complicated, and it's not always, like you said, investing is a lot of this markets are psychologically driven, absolutely true. So it's not just all about numbers. It's really about dealing with the psychology of the clients, the psychology of the collective, understanding that, and finding a place where, you know, you could advise them, give them the best, help them make the best educated decisions possible.
And this is certainly no time to be myopic with a confluence of cycles. These rhythms that have been moving will continue to move and sometimes will form a perfect storm when more than one of them is going in crisis at one time. You mentioned inflation and deflation at one time. Cycles can be in conflict. One can be high, another low. They can be in different stages of development. Some are long, slow-moving cycles. Others are more immediate with a higher frequency and will pass sooner. And you may have a tide coming your way. So you have to really look, when you're just studying the data and analyzing the statistics and crunching the numbers and looking at trends and moving averages and advanced decline line, put call ratio, what have you, maybe going to play some options, going to buy some long-term stock investments, looking at interest rates and bonds. Well, when you're analyzing the data, you are getting a lot of information on what the market is doing. And then you try to project ahead from that as to what it's likely to do based on some history. That's a very good formula. But it's not the only thing at play, because when things are not always running just by their own volition and are influenced by things that are greater and outside of the market and even out of our world, then it's better to know when these things are subject to change. And especially if it's a large cycle that changes, the impact is even greater. So you've been helping people do that for quite a while. Now, what do you do when you speak with an individual, William? Do you just basically talk with them one-on-one, find out what their interests are? Do they say, well, what is the position of the planets right now? What is this going to mean to me?
Well,
or do they tell you what they want to do?
Yeah, I have them fill out a form, you know, that gives me a good idea where they're at. I mean, obviously, they give me their birth data, and I need, you know, it helps to know, you know, what the socioeconomic status is, you know, if they're self-employed, employed, et cetera, married, single. These things, the contextual factors really play a very important role in helping me determine where a person's at and how these transits and progressions, these planetary transits and progressions are going to manifest and play themselves out. Of course, everything we're doing is speculation, right? Mm-hmm. So, and there's room, there's always, you know, the idea is to speculate and then find a way where the client can accelerate, change, move forward, develop, even if that process initially is painful. I have many clients say, yep, I think what you're advising me is correct, but what you're recommending is maybe the most difficult option. And sometimes that's really what's required. But the return on investment for making those types of, taking that type of action, especially when the transits augur that particular activity or approach, always pays
yes.
off very well. And I believe, and the reason I'm bringing that up is because that's precisely what the type of configurations we have going on right now require these types of game-changing actions rather than something we can do gradually and phase it in and we don't have to really upset the apple cart. It doesn't seem to be working anymore. And one of the other things you can say, more certain now than you could even 5 years ago, and although this is generally true, what I'm going to say to you, but this is more so than ever, is the past doesn't equal the future.
Mm.
A lot of people in the investing counseling business just look at past trends. They'll say, well, you know, the market's done X, Y, and Z since 1926 and, you know, and since 1950 and this and this and that. And then based on that, they come up with some templated formula. And I'm not just talking about markets. I'm talking about vocational selection, job choices, many, many areas of life. So a lot of the rules that worked in the past, in a lot of those books that we read back in the 70s, 80s, even the 90s, all right, on how to or the best way or how to get ahead or how to beat the market or whatever it is, really are not going to apply during this period. And it's what's not on the radar but is there, all right, what's not on the collective mass media radar but what's present is what the astrology is picking up and what needs to be focused and dealt with. And this could be a period then where you're not just surviving, but you're thriving.
If you know where the currents are.
Correct.
And the currents may seem invisible to us if we're judging from old data.
Correct.
So we have to find those invisible guardrails And it would help to know the signs as we're looking for that, or even know that we should be looking in the first place. And a lot of people are not considering that factor.
Yes, absolutely. You know, like I said, the past doesn't equal the future, and a lot of astrology, there's actually a split in astrology. I want to talk a little bit about this. There's you know, like there's a power struggle going on in D.C., and there's a power struggle going on in Wall Street and amongst the bankers, the investment bankers and the commercial bankers. And so what you're seeing now is there's a big divide, because a lot of the astrologers who've been successful, let's say, for the past 20, 30 years, they don't understand the crisis in the sense that they may need to change the way they're approaching, you know, what the astrology wants. What does astrology want us as a community in order to articulate the archetypal dynamics that are coming up from the collective? And there's another group, and it's sort of a growing small minority, which I'm a member of, is seeing something very different, saying that what you learned 5 years ago at the last United Astrology Conference is just really not going to apply. And we've actually found with the current research that we're doing at the Astrological Institute of Research that many of those rules don't even really work when we run them on the computer. And we're finding things that do work, okay, that actually change many of the traditional rules that we believe were sacrosanct, that could never be questioned. So this type of thing that's going on now is pervasive in every field, and it's something that I try and stress with everyone, that, you know, we're going to have to learn the rules as we go, all of us. And and that's really part of what this paradigm shift is about as well.
Indeed.
I don't know if I answered your question, but that's...
No, you did, and you certainly got me thinking, and I think we've got some people thinking, too. I see a caller has called in. We're going to go to the phones here in a minute. Folks, you can call in and contribute to the show, ask a question by calling area code 347-884-9593. We're speaking with William Stick Evers, astrological advisor and consultant here on the Cycles of Change radio program. So let's go to phones and take our first call. I see a caller has joined us from area code 575. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call.
You're quite welcome. You're here on Cycles Radio with William Stick Evers. What would you like to say, or do you have a question?
I have a question. Do I need to give you like my birth date or something?
Well, why don't you ask me the question? We'll see.
Okay, well, I just wanted to see, like, I wanted a brief overview of my year astrologically.
A brief overview of your year. Well, I don't know if we can do that without me taking a look, thorough look at your chart. But if you ask me a question, a specific question in relation to some issue you're having, maybe I can answer that.
I guess my problem right now is that I'm a student, unemployed, and I'm looking to go back to school, but I need to pay back my tuition, and I graduated of my class as valedictorian. I did a lot of good things, but I guess I'm not employable to employers, so that's my problem.
Yeah, okay. Understood. Well, one of the things, what is it that you got a degree in, by the way?
Excuse me?
You got a degree, I assume.
No, I'm just a sophomore.
Oh, you're a sophomore. And what degree program are you in?
Biology pre-med.
Okay. All right. So at this point, you're having issues in terms of making payments for tuition?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. All right, so let's take a look here. Now, I don't see any situation right now where school is... I see you continuing going to school, but in terms of employment, what do you mean by that? In terms of getting work to get you through school until you finish your degree? Is that what you're asking? Because I'm not clear.
Yeah, just to pay back my tuition, because right now I can't go back to school until I pay back my tuition. So you know, I'm kind of on the loss of things right now, of like what I need to do.
Have you discussed this with them?
With my school?
Yes.
They don't really care. They just want the money.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, I can tell you right now that, are you employed now?
No.
No. All right, let me take a look here. This is where we use horary. So the moment that he's asking the question about his employment prospects, I note the time, and then I look at the chart, and I see where are we at.
Are there
any
positions in stagnation right now? Is there any retrograde going on right now? Is
well,
there any
actually,
conflict
it's
going
more
on?
It's more sophisticated than that. We actually take the time and cast the chart, and then we use very specific rules. So he's really looking, his issue is now to generate income based on employment. We would call it non-vocational employment. Since it's not going to be something he's going to do as a career. Actually, that looks quite promising. I think the issue has been, so you need to take much more initiative in that area. I think you're certainly quite capable of generating some decent income to sort of resolve this issue, to make payments on your tuition and get that going. And then I see somehow a breakthrough where you're going to be able to go back and finish that degree. So I'm pretty optimistic for you. The issue here has more to do with your lack of initiative or game plan, you know, putting a plan in action. Normally that it's other factors, but I think it's something you can achieve within the next 3 months.
Okay.
So it's interesting to look at cycles, because when you know that what you do can make a difference, there's nothing opposing that. There's nothing to say that there is a great void before you. The cycles are not saying there's nothing there. They're saying there is opportunity, but you must go out and get it. So that would be encouraging to know that there are no obstacles and that there are currents that are moving so that you can step out and find them. Can astrology help you discover things like this, kind of using a specific example of this gentleman who has posed a question that's being asked by a lot of students right now who are in the same catch-22? So it's very interesting to see a specific case and a specific question being answered from a cyclical point of view of astrology. So I don't know, Wham, am I going off on a tangent here, or am I starting to grasp a little bit just on this touching upon a situation so briefly?
No, I think you're explaining it very well. In fact, I was going to mention that he would do quite well. I mean, he can easily get a retail job. I don't know, again, his background. I mean, he could certainly, with what I'm seeing here, he could certainly start working in retail in the, where they sell computers and iPhones, and, you know, he could certainly work for Apple. You know, they're always open to very intelligent, motivated people. For him, you know, I don't see so much of a problem getting started once he's totally committed to finding, you know, I would say that he's a person that if he could probably sell anything or be able to work effectively in that area if it's something that he uses and he believes in that product line. So that's an example here of how I
so
can.
So the cycles say it's time to hunt, even if the game are not apparent and visible, it's time to hunt and to be more outward, because being so right now, in this time and place, it can make a difference.
That's right. And in his specific case, that is certainly the case. Sometimes I have to tell a client, look, stop pushing. You need to retreat, you need to reflect, and you need to reassess. You may need to cut your losses, all right? It really depends. In this person's case, the previous caller, it has really more to do with taking initiative. There are opportunities, and he just really needs to sort of, like, get on with it.
Did that kind of help answer a little bit of your question, sir?
Yes, it really did, actually. But I think the only problem with me taking initiative, and I can see the part where I say, like, if I love the product or something, I was with Herbalife, but I the problem with that was that I was shy, so I couldn't really speak to people. And as a taking initiative, I still feel, I guess, my shyness takes more over me. So that kind of troubles me, or like, yeah, I don't know if that's the ego or whatever, but like.
No, I just really think that wasn't the product for you. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do, to be knocking on doors and making phone calls with people. And the multi-level marketing aspect is certainly not your thing. You need to be working like where you're collaborating with other people in the retail. I'm just using Apple computers. You see so many young people, pre-med people, very intelligent, very enthusiastic. You walk in there and if you have a problem with your iPhone, it's like 3 or 4 or 5 people, ready to take care of it and bring it to the department, and they have you sit down and, give you magazines and and talk about new products and stuff like that. It's a whole different thing. And I see that being more your thing, more so than like going to Best Buy, where you're just basically a clerk and they send you back into the back room to see if there's any stock. But someone who's really that type of retail, you would do very well in.
There's nothing like a supported environment, too, rather than just being out there on your own. If you set up an Herbalife site, they just basically give you a web page or give you some products that you can put out there, but then you're basically on your own. And in these transitional times, the past ain't what it used to be. And so we're finding ourselves, crossing intersections and sometimes avoiding stepping on the banana peel as we're doing that. So just being a lone wolf sometimes, trying to be an entrepreneur without a support system, is a little bit tricky when the times they are changing. So, William, I think that maybe you hit on something here, as I think you often do, and working with a support structure and an environment where the format is laid out for you, that will put you in a place where you get the experience and the practice of being interactive with people, and that is a confidence builder. Nobody who's ever been on the stage for acting, dancing, singing, or any other profession or out there working with people felt naturally when they did it at first. It comes from experience. So seek the structure, seek the format, get in with a system, and then go forward with that, because that'll carry you as you find the opportunities and learn how to recognize the opportunities where you can strike out on your own. Just because you didn't see them yet doesn't mean that they're not there. Not that you can't do it, but try a different format, and there's nothing opposing you in the cyclical world of all things that change. Is that somewhere on target anywhere?
Yeah, it's definitely on target. In fact, exactly. You need to work within a more structured environment at first, and I think he'll do much better than he believes. And I believe that will stabilize his current crisis and get the cash flow in, be able to work something out with making loan payments without defaulting, and then put a game plan together to get him back into school and finish his degree and go on to med school and create a career for himself.
And this comes, our dear caller from area code 575, that from William Stick Evers, who has a lot of experience talking with people and working with them on questions, dilemmas, forecasts, outlook, and so forth. So maybe there's something you can take away from this conversation and consider. Maybe it'll help support you as you make your next move. Certainly hope so. Well, thank you so much for calling. It was very, very helpful, and I appreciate how your experience helped us to see what William does in action, a bit of applied. William is not just a man of theory. He puts it in practice. I got to see William. I was sitting right next to him as a panelist as we got into our Q&A section. We all had questions, all three of us, but I found myself listening as if I were in the audience when William was answering the questions that were coming up. And that it just absolutely fascinated me, because sometimes a question would come up, it would be somewhat specific, or it might be something about all of us in the world, but the references that you called in, William, were coming from different sources, of what you did in Japan or what you've learned about history, and you instantly recall them in a pertinent way to show they're appropriate. And I began to see how so many things in what is considered a world of different studies and categorized subjects and fields that are alone and sometimes not understanding each other, they're all an interconnected universe if we just understand that and then understand how they're all moving in rhythm. And this is, in some part, what you do. Is that anywhere near on target, William?
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. I realized, too, that if I didn't really take a look at the mundane historical geopolitical factors and look at the work of André Barbeau and other mundane astrologers who further developed these applications to nation states and markets and, you know, crisis wars, and looked at them, I would really be lost. I would not be as effective as I am now with helping people to give them a sense of idea of what's happening, of the purpose, you know, why it's happening, why is this crisis, why is this global crisis going on, why is, like, everything, the perfect storm of X, Y, and Z happening. And then, you know, I would really just be at loss. I wouldn't be able to help them other than just take a look at their transits and give them some remedial advice and, you know, pat them on the back and cheerlead them out the door. And that's just something I knew I would have to just, I just couldn't practice that way anymore. I would just rather give it up. And I think it's very important now that everybody who is in the helping profession using metaphysics or whatever means gets a much better understanding of what's happening with these cycles, regardless of there's no need to actually be able to completely understand a horoscope but there's enough out there on the internet where people can read about it, get educated, and come to their own conclusions that something's in play that's much bigger than all of us. That there seems to be a global transition, there's a plan at work, and our civilization is moving to the next level. We're going to see people are going to have to step up to the challenge. They're just not given any choice, all of us. And we all feel it every day now. You know, my doctor recently told me that, you know, she gave me a phone call and said, oh, I was reading your website, and there's some truth behind it. And I said, well, why do you say that? She says, well, you know, I prescribe more Valium and other antidepressants in the past 2 years than I have, from the time I started practicing, you know. So, I mean, she was just, you know, very honest with me and said, I hope this thing lets up. Give me some good news, you know. I mean, I'm getting confirmation all over the place. Everyone and everything at some level, small business, major corporation, nation state, person, marriage, all right, astrologer, even astrologers are not exempt, are in a state of crisis where they need to make significant game-changing decisions. And it's pervasive.
Now, you know, when you mention the state of flux, William, I know that sometimes when we go through a crisis, it is the birth pangs of a new era. And other times when we go through crisis, it's more like castles crumbling. It depends on what time you are in the cycle. If I were to look at this as a tropical year, when the first day of spring comes, the direct vertical rays across the equator, you have tropical storms all around the equator. But that's the beginning of spring in the north. And sometimes seasonal springs right at the equinox in fall is the coming of winter. Do you have any outlooks of the tendency of influence that may be before us, either as a nation or different nations, or on the total global picture, what we might see ahead in the next years as a result of the astrological influence?
Well, there's a few influences at play. I mean, I think we talked about this when we met, was that the Mayan calendar was never about the end of the world. It was about the end of the world that we knew and the beginning of a new world, right? And I even say it's the beginning of the end of their world and the beginning of our world, all right? The world that needs to be in order for us to really grow and thrive spiritually, mm-hmm. physically, mentally, psychologically, on all levels, right? And that world right now is not in place. That's why the stress and anxiety is increasing exponentially. So we're seeing the death and birth at the same time. You know, remember one thing, as a child is being born, it's a near-death experience. If they don't get the child out in time, it can asphyxiate and suffocate. Many things go wrong. Until recently, one out of 200 women go into cardiac arrest. One out of 1,000 children are born die during the childbirth. Now, these numbers have been significantly reduced because of medical technology. But this is also this is the case with animals as well. Obviously, it's much lower, but the birth process death, it's a crisis, and death is a real possibility when birth is happening. So we're giving birth to something, and that's not just happening to the world. That's happening to people. All right, they're going through these breakdowns, these spiritual emergencies, if you will, that are actually about something dying and something new being born. That's a lot of things. That's my new focus now, especially this year. And also, I wanted to mention that, you know, the Chinese astrologers, this is a very significant year because it's the year of the snake. And the year of the snake, all right, historically a very tumultuous period, because snake years are marked by major transformational change and sometimes great upheaval. And I want to give you an idea of the magnitude of change and upheaval that's possible, all right? I'm just going to go back every 12 years, just give you an idea, just for, you know, for 144 years, all right?
Okay.
So we just went into the Mayan 2012 new cycle, so the beginning of the new, so we're in this death-birth process. Now, now we entered the snake, the year of the snake in February, right, early February, and if you go back 12 years, 2001, you had the 9/11 attack and the U.S. war with Afghanistan. If you go back 12 years further, year of the snake, 1989, the Tiananmen Square incident, crisis, the fall of the Berlin Wall, and the collapse of the Soviet Empire in Europe. And
that
then you have 77. That was the Second Cold War, which the Soviet Union began. There was a few other things going on at that time. And then 65, the Vietnam War and the Countercultural Revolution. And 53, 12 years further, Korean War. 41, Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, World War II, USA. 1929, stock market crashes that held at the Great Depression. Go back another 12 years, Russian Revolution in 1917, which heralds the creation of the USSR. 1905, the Russian-Japanese War, Russo-Japanese War. Go back 1893, the Depression of 1893. It's called. That was our first depression. It wasn't the Great Depression, but it was the first U.S. Depression. And then back 1881, the assassination of President James Garfield, and a whole list of other smaller events all related to that. Back 1869, the 15th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, black males are given the right to vote. That was a major game changer. And I could go further back than that. So this year is going to be a pivot point, watershed year, I believe, because you have a number of things happening. You have this year of the snake that I just described. You have the beginning of the fifth age of the Mayan sun. You also have what we call the Uranus-Pluto alignment. The last Uranus-Pluto alignment that occurred was in the 60s. And that period of cultural revolution and change, it was youth defiance, all right? The prior one to that was in the 30s with the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And the rise of fascism. And so we have this Uranus-Pluto just started in 2012 and is going to make seven hits. It's going into its third hit in April out of seven. And then on top of that, the Barbara Planetary Cyclic Index, which is all the planets taken into account and put onto a graph, like a Dow Jones Industrial, if you will, of solar system, is going to start its another precipitous drop from where it started. Where it started in 2000. So you had a drop in 2001, which was 9/11. It dropped. It sort of stayed put around 2012. And now it takes another precipitous drop starting in at the later half of this year. So I really think that, you know, we are in the zone of uncertainty.
Now, this and, transitional period that we're in, whether things turn up or turn down, do we have an idea how long the cyclic influence will give us this turbulence, this transitional period of choppy waters before we can determine the tides thereafter? And how long is our period of uncertainty?
Well, we just entered, we're entering the bull tide. So this period started in 2000, and I think you and I can agree that there was a lot of things going on. We had the election of George Bush.
Certainly can.
Certainly the neocons, and, you know, that was the beginning of the quantitative easing. They didn't call it that, but that's actually what was where they were subsidizing the mortgage market, the home mortgages, and that was the beginning of the credit default swaps and the derivative exchanges, and where commercial, where all banking became investment banking. Your personal checking money became money for investment. For your bank started taking your personal money and started investing it with all different exotic instruments. All that started in 2000. Now it's coming to a head, and it will. And then now, and we're going to, between now and the beginning of 2016 is the most intense period, and then it bottoms in terms of, like, you know the dramatic arc peaks around 2015, 2016, and then it begins to slowly subside and bottom by 2022, and so. I'm telling people, this is not going to go away next year. This crisis is not going away. It's building up. It's another layer to another crisis that's leading to another crisis until change actually occurs, systemic change.
Well, sometimes, you know, I would like our listeners to consider this concept, and Waymo, you can either support or oppose this point of view, is that sometimes you just have to shuffle the deck in order to be dealt a new hand. And I believe that in some cycles of influence, that is what I call the megarhythms of the world, not looking at the astrological position, but just merely looking at the trends of social change, which I believe are periodic, tell me that right now it is a type of crisis that, the likes of which you don't see but for so many thousands of years, a confluence of cycles there. Which was interesting that as I studied this getting close to this time after first seeing it in the 70s, that I started to find that there were so many other things in a confluence coming, pointing at the same time. But looking ahead, that is moving us into a new era of reason, a new era of romanticism. It's going to manifest in many ways. It's going to include parishifts all over the world. And last, throughout this century, all of the next century, and into part of the century beyond that. But in order to get there, in order to get to that rising tide, we've got to just shuffle the deck. So my point of view is just to hang in there and accept that this is a transitional time, but it's going to be a much better time later in our life and the lives of our descendants. That's not
really
necessarily what's
well.
Going to happen, but there is one, looking at one set of cycles, and I don't have the vantage point of looking at all of the cycle worlds of cycles that you're bringing in here, but the more that I study the cycles of change, the more I'm convinced that, yes, we are moved by tides that are greater and outside of ourselves, but we are also got to consider sickly, that there's cycles within cycles within cycles, which is why I got so fascinated with how you put them together, you know. And so you can study to learn to play the trumpet. You could learn how to play a woodwind. You could be a really good drummer. You could be good on the viola. And that's nice. And that plays a beautiful song. But when you put them all together, the brass, the woodwind, the timpani, and the strings, you have an orchestra. And I believe, William, that when you listen to cycles some thousands of years long, you're listening to the music of the orbs, and you're understanding how they affect us in the macrosphere and the microsphere at the same time. And that's like listening to layers of orchestras. I believe you're hearing the orchestra, even when some of us think we're dancing to just one instrument.
That's true. I mean, that's an issue inside of astrology, too, now. There's, like I said, there's a great divide where, you know, there are just some astrologers who, you know, the last UAC conference, United Astrology Conference, international, we had like 2,000 people there, astrologers, all professional, amateurs, beginners, advanced, you know, and there was an absolute avoidance of what we're talking about today, about the economy, and about anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything of like that is really mainstream media news or suppressed mainstream media news or marginalized mainstream media news. You would think it's 1985 if you went to that conference and, mm-hmm. and attended different workshops and classes. You know, so, I mean, now I was one of the few people attending that was trying to be the voice that, hey, guys, wake up, smell the coffee. And it was just so, you know, I'm one of the younger astrologers in the world of astrology. And, you know, there were some of my peers in my age group who also, you know, we would all collaborate after the, you know, every evening and realize that, like, you know, we almost feel like we're the 20-some-odd-year-olds in the 60s saying you can't trust anyone over 30. Right. And meanwhile, we're like in our mid-40s. So
yeah.
There is a big division going on where people are seeing it, understanding it, wanting to get more of an understanding and trying to become more resourceful. And there's others who just aren't, I would say, in denial. And the plausible deniability arguments that they present are falling apart rapidly, day by day, by every news report that's coming out on the internet. So it's the plausible deniability factor is coming to an end. It pretty much has, but certainly by the end of this year, I would believe the majority of astrologers may not want to accept the type of conclusions of where the end game may go or be, or what type of transition or the magnitude, but they will accept there's a crisis finally. That's what I believe will happen.
There seems to be two schools of thought of reaction going on right now, and that's very interesting because when I look at the cycles that I'm looking at, I see a rise of the intellectual cycle coming out of a crisis period, a rise of the emotional cycle coming out of the crisis period, just now coming out of the crisis, while what I call the physical cycle is low and declining. The physical cycle lasting hundreds of years long is what gave us the machine age, what gave us the Industrial Revolution and the military-industrial complex. But as that crossed down in the latter part of the 20th century with the crisis, then what's happening is the heyday of the working class is on a declining tide. And the things that we're used to are just fading away. At the same time, the new things replacing it are rising. And what's happening is people are basically choosing one tide or another. If they're holding on to the past and becoming part of it, and that's what happens in a declining tide. And the shock of the last 12 years with, well, we know everything that's happened in the last 12 years in the world arena, a lot of it happening right here in the United States, is called people to go inward, a little bit of shell shock, you know, pull up the drawbridge, and it's like stunned. While other people are rapidly moving into the rising information, technical world, so forth, taking advantage of how we say the world is flat in communications, and people are reaching out all over the world with social networks and everything like that. So which one are you on? Which one are you going to choose? We've got a couple of cycles that are rising, bringing us a new era that's finally beginning to replace the old one that started to die before this rise. Or are you going to hold on and continue to decline with the lowering physical cycle and become lessened as the industrial world itself is becoming lessened? So, you know, I can concur with your view that we got two different reactions going on at the same time. That's sort of my way of looking at a confluence of cycles. And it's interesting to compare notes with you, William.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you say this so well, maybe I should be interviewing you. No,
well, so much of what you say
is so well for everybody. I mean, that's really what's important here.
Yeah. Well, it supports some of the things that I am, but you're always bringing in new premises as you're educating me as to why you're saying it, and that's what I like. When you give an answer, you just don't give the conclusion. You're helping me to understand why, and I can imagine you work very well with your clients when you do that. They understand what's happening and why it's happening. And then they can take away an ability to recognize, you know, the opportunities and the watch fors as they're, you know, going off in the world, and knowing that it's not always a world of physical causality. Sometimes
Absolutely.
There are just big things moving.
Absolutely. In fact, the archetypal of astrology that I was trained to do in my early days, which actually helped later on with understanding mundane cycles, is that the planets are archetypal. That the archetypal processes from the collective unconscious or the animus mundi, the planets represent those processes, and when they form certain types of alignments, they actually form and inform the physical realm. It's not just all psychological. It's not just in the psyche. They actually do create. They do affect the matrix, all right? That's the best way, because what we're finding to be physical is not even physical. When we talk about the Higgs boson and the Higgs field, and you know, you're talking about velocity that and of subatomic particles that have no mass and things like that. What is physical now? What does that really mean? It's all really virtual, and so when we look at it from that standpoint, we can realize that wow, planets have there seems to be a synchronicity. The law of synchronicity between what's happening in our cosmology and what's happening on our own personal level and collective level within the world we live. And so, you know, I think that I guess my point is that understanding the archetypal construct and realizing that physical and psychic or spiritual, let's just use the word psychic, it's difficult to ask, you know, it's very hard to pinpoint what is what. That's right. Is it the physical that creates the psychological, or is it the psychological shift that then invokes the physical processes? And now we're finding the answer is neither. It's both and neither. And this is something
that
that's very hard to articulate to people who want a nuts and bolts, yes or no, black and white answer.
Inextricable, yet individual. And we got to understand how things can be seemingly contradictory, but I believe it was it Confucius who's described E of I Ching, or maybe you pronounce it I, of I Ching, as being
I Ching,
thank you very much, like a Latin-sounding E, who said things can be constant and ever-changing. And the analogy he used is that he stood by the side of a stream when he came up with this. And he said, well, the stream is constant. The stream's always there. But it's ever-changing because the water is flowing through it. Hence, we've gotten the expression, you never step in the same stream twice. And so as far as physical influencing psyche or vice versa, well, it's both and it's neither. And that may sound like a conflict, but we have to get out of our left brain linear thought of view and embrace why there were paradoxes given to us from Taoist scripture in order to deliberately take us out of our normal sense of reasoning, such as the question, imagine the sound of one hand clapping. Well, that takes a little bit of doing, but I have often wondered if it's rhetorical, not seeking an answer, but to get us to think in a different way, maybe right brain abstract, maybe intuitive. What a wonderful term we've invented lately called emotional intelligence. I got an interesting question about the planets. The combined influence on the whole world together having to do with Barycenter. But I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program here at blogtalkradio.com/cycles. We're talking with astrologer and consultant William Stick Evers, who is using his education in psychology, his familiarity and training with many masters on the influence of celestial bodies, his understanding of history, which is diverse, and his international experience with his offices here in New York and in Japan, and his experiences working with clientele in Europe. William, the question I had is there ever astrological perception of the barycenter, the combined influence of all the planets being some on this side or maybe a lot of them on another side at the same time, and pulling on the sun in different directions? Is there any patterns in that? Or do astrologers focus on that positioning when they're looking at the influence of the sun itself? Odd question, I know, but it's one I wanted to ask.
Well, there is research going on in that area that's considered like very cutting-edge, exotic astrology. because we're, it's actually a form of mundane, but it would be more considered in the exotic sector of mundane astrology. And so, you know, there's very interesting studies on that effect, but it's very difficult to make any statements or speculative statements with a level of confidence. I'm pretty much trying to stick with things that I can measure. I can certainly demonstrate when I'm challenged, and believe me, I'm challenged. I'm challenged by my own community. I'm challenged by very skeptical people who think, you know, they already, if there was something to anything I had to say, they've already would known that information to begin with. You know, I try and stick with what I can demonstrate, and I'm using very state-of-the-art expert system technology, but I can quantify and qualify the outcomes. I can put it on a graph. I can show. I can backward test it. So with that type of stuff you're talking about, yeah, there's research going on, but it's too early to say what it really means.
Quite true, and I don't know anyone who's drawing any conclusions from the barycentric changes. They merely observe it, look at what's happening and going on at the time. In terms of weather, I've gotten some of that, but I certainly haven't gotten anyone making any forecasts based on that. It's far more, been proven far more reliable to look at the cyclical bodies as we know them and taking their combined effect into account. I'd like to ask you a little bit about history of astrology. Our knowledge of history is a bit scant the further back we go, but do we have an idea of the origins of the astrology that we know today? I often hear it attributed to the Chaldeans. I wonder what the Egyptians were doing on that. What can you share with us about?
Most of our astrology that we know today, now with the recent archaeological digs and findings, it comes out of the Sumerian civilization. And supposedly, according to their text that survived, we have over 5,000 of their, they're actually in stone, that the a race of beings from another star system, the Anunnaki, who actually jump-started the human race through some DNA modification, actually taught us mathematics, astronomy, astrology, calendrics, subdivided the, you know, explained the ecliptic. I mean, one of the big mysteries is why does Aries start here and Taurus end here, and how did, why was the wheel divided 360 degrees and with 30-degree quadrants?
Yeah, what's your point of reference on that?
There's no point of reference until you go back to the text, the ancient Sumerian text, where the Anunnaki, who jump-started human civilization from Africa, and where they were operational. They actually landed in the Persian Gulf and established a base there. Now, I'm just telling you what's coming out of this text. Whether people believe that or not, there's many resources on that. But this is where we find out where it's all coming from. And then from there, the Egyptian, the Chaldean, and the Greeks, the Hellenistic, really developed it. But this, you have to realize, too, that the Sumerians were using astrology more as a mundane application to help administrate government and for political continuity of government and weather forecasting. And they're also very adept at omen reading. And that's something that's really sort of underplayed now, but was very important and very detailed traditional rules on if, for example, a certain type of cloud would pass an hour before the king arrived to at a specific area, or before a battle, or, you know, or something that we would just wouldn't even be part of our worldview of giving any consideration to, would be decisive in determining the outcome. And so they were very drawn to that type of stuff. The comets, for example, they expect the number of comets. They're all emerging, all these comets and meteors. It's not just in Russia that they're crashing, but there's also other bigger comets. They were considered quite significant, major game changes, major variables, meaning the level of uncertainty for the king or the kingdom would be put in jeopardy if a comet was seen, prior to, or during a particular period. So, it all goes back to that civilization.
Yeah, and they were looking for these things of synchronicity because they're used to looking at things that outside of themselves. Here in Western culture, cycles are not taught. And when you go into academia in order to learn history, it's all seen as a sequence of events. But the elements of what's happening now, the contemporaneous indications, give us the synchronicity that this is a sign. The I Ching itself was derived from taking yarrow sticks and throwing them up in the air. Some of them would be broken in half. Some of them would be not broken in half. Therefore, they were the full length. And you throw them up in the air, let them land as they will, and observe the pattern. In fact, the I Ching symbols that we have of broken and solid lines represent the broken and unbroken yarrow sticks. They were put together as trigrams. Eventually, two trigrams would make a hexagram. They arranged them and got a system of 64 hexagrams. And this was all built on the element of chance for indications of the element of change. You mentioned Jung. In fact, Jung took the term of synchronicity and based it on I Ching. He was an avid student of Eastern philosophy, and his anima and animus come from yin and yang. So he just basically rebranded them and gave us a great depth of understanding. Thank goodness for him for giving us a window beyond what is an empirical thought. And I love empirical thought because it's so beneficial, but we can sometimes leap beyond that when we go into these things of learning how we can read signs, read the synchronicity, and understand the cycles about this. And this is a lot of what I appreciate in what you do, William, because you're educated in both. You're bilingual. And you have to be. You speak logic, but you also understand the things that are not derived from logic, and you did it through your education and your experience, and you managed to put those things together. You mentioned the characteristics of the planets and the archetypes and everything like that. That reminded me of the saying that men are from Mars and women are from Venus. And I heard you use the term physical there as well. Would you say that some planets have a more physical characteristic, some have a more emotional influence, and some have a more intellectual influence on us as they change?
Well, I believe all the planets affect us on all those levels. And, people used to, in traditional astrology, would say, well, Mercury has to do with the cognition, and the moon has to do with the state of mind and what we would look at in terms of emotion or emotional intelligence. And Neptune has to do with the transcendental realm, the realm of the archetypes, dreams, fantasies that dwell up from the unconscious into consciousness and how we deal with them.
Up from under the sea, as it were. In dreams,
exactly.
Under the ocean is representing the unconscious. And interesting.
Right. But what we find here is that and it's very good to make those distinctions in the beginning, but to say, Mercury can only deal with thinking, that's not quite true. It actually is, or Venus is only about love and romance, that's not quite true either.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, so you have to be careful not to get too, a Venus can have an intellectual effect, an emotional effect, a spiritual gateway, all right, a connection with the anima, a man's connection with the woman inside him, the female intelligence inside him is actually quite necessary for his individuation. So that would be an aspect of Venus. A woman's animus is the male side in the woman. You see this now with the feminist movement, the emergence of the collective animus in civilization. And the gateway to Mars is her ability to take action and to decide a career and not necessarily rear children, making that the primary means, to find a suitable partner to rear children with and raise a family. Now it's all changed. So, see, when you look at the planets now, they can affect us on many levels, spiritual, physical, intellectual. At first, you look at it that each planet rules a particular category, but it gets more, as you get deeper into this, it's a lot more complex.
I understand. I'm getting to understand it more. We have to watch our connotations and use the term before it's neither and both. So when we look at all of the mind, heart, body, spirit, and things we haven't given names to, everything is in anything. And it's no wonder that Blake spoke of seeing the entire universe in a single grain of sand. So we got to remember all elements are at play all the time. It is a confluence of that. And everything. So what advice would you give to people just in general? I heard how effectively you handle an individual, but we have a society of mass consciousness. We do have a herd mentality, or else there wouldn't be trends. And so, and particularly to people here in the United States, after we've had quite a shock in 2001, and then we went on with our internal stripes after that, you know, 2008 and other problems. Do you have something that people should kind of remember in these times, since you see things from a different point of view? I may be putting you on the spot with such a question, but I would like to know if you – I've heard you talk to an individual. What would you say to a nation?
I would say that we need to get out of our comfort zone. I believe that, you know, we have bought in too much that if we do X, Y, and Z, all right, and stay within that comfort zone of predictability, we're going to get the result, the happiness, the fulfillment. We just have to break out of that model. Now, I know the 60s generation made an attempt to do that, but one of the failures of the baby boomers, and I don't mean to put all baby boomers in one, but it is an issue I have seen, and it's an issue being discussed now among such Generation Xers, who are actually living with that Uranus Pluto, who were born with it, who are the children from many of those baby boomers, is the failure to take a lot of that radical defiance and those arguments they were making, and sticking it to the government, sticking it to the man, and making the types of changes necessary within the financial, the government, and the creative structures and the corporate structures that included minorities, women, in such a way that, and although there was progress, but many of them actually became the very people they were protesting against, and in some ways, more controlling. And so, you know, they were the ones who overthrew the GI generation, right, because they were so conservative and defined. This is what looking like an American is and being like an American, and you join the military, and you don't question the draft, and you do all these things. And so... so many of those people in the 70s sort of moved on, you know, and forgot about, you know, let's just put it this way, maybe not forgot, but they sort of thought that experimentation was something that was behind them, but never got to implement fully the level of reforms that was really quite necessary, which was actually necessary to prevent what we're undergoing now. Had the baby boomers implemented fully those reforms, and I know I knew the empire struck back in 68, 69. I knew when Nixon got in, you know, I know I'm very aware of that aspect of history. But had they had continued the fight, we might have, this transition might be a much more graceful than what we're going to undergo, I believe, now.
Yeah.
Does that
make
sense?
Yeah, old hippies never die. They just fade into society, and a lot of them did. And it's amazing how quickly after the 1960s, which was a time of non-materialism and dropping out, man, that the yuppie era came. And a lot of people jumped from one movement to another and became young urban professionals. And it was a new age of materialism. And, you know, so, and women were a material girl living in a material world, and it was all about the money and everything else. People had been out in the sun before, but now things are a little bit different. So the times change quickly here in a nation, but I think that what you said is right. And if the 60s generation had remembered to keep going on and bringing on the forums, and we might not have had some of these problems. And I would remind people to take the lessons of history. Look back on your lifetime. Listen to old people, too, and ask them. Whenever you meet anyone older than you, don't take a 1960 view of don't trust anyone over 30. Ask them questions. What was it like? What was the difference between when they were your age and what they see now? Someone once told me that when an old person dies, it's like a library burning down. This is why I respect William Stick Evers, because he draws from history, not just from his lifetime, for what he may have learned, who have lived before him and are still here to speak with him, but he brings in references from history. I've learned how important that is. That is how I was able to support the notion that we as a collective are moving in cycles. And that's what led me to discover that we are, in fact, moving in a collective. And then I found that the collective moved not only on its own volition, but was influenced by things that are greater and outside of us, namely the celestial bodies. And they have a saying that when the student is ready, the master would appear. I began all of a sudden, when I started to realize these things and see these things, I had the synchronicity to begin to meet more people, or someone say, hey, I'm going to go hear someone else lecture, and so forth. And the next thing I know, I'm at the Meta Center, and I'm sitting between William Stick Evers on my right and Don Conroe on my left, who is talking about the rhythms of music and the gong, and I'm hearing about the rhythms of the heavenly bodies, and I'm talking about the rhythms of us together. William, we've barely got 8 minutes left in the program. What excites you the most about your field of study? I mean, you have been into so many things, and you've found this amazing settling point where it seems the spokes of so many studies lead to the center of the wheel where you are. What is it that you find most rewarding with working with people when it comes to bringing them into the understanding and sharing the experiences of what you've learned?
Well, I help them make it better. I think that's my primary, you know, I help them make it better. I make it better. I help them make it better in terms of giving them a sense of meaning, giving them strategies, informing them, helping educate them. Really, that's what my role is. I'm really an educator. I help people make informed decisions. And that's really what education is about. It's really not about shoving information down someone's throat or, you know, enforcing a certain agenda, you know, through trying to convince them of something. But I think really that's what my, you know, I really feel motivated to help people make their lives better, to improve the quality of their lives, the meaning of their lives. You know, and, you know, I practice what I preach, you know. I do my own Jungian therapy, you know. I go to the gym 3 times a week with a trainer. You know, I work out very hard to stay in shape. I stay on top of my game. You know, I'm always doing more cutting-edge research. I'm always trying to change things up, get out of my comfort zone, realize that I'm going to have to take a loss on this or do that, and, you know, what worked 5 years ago is not going to work this time. You know, I try and implement it on a personal level as well, so I can be an example for other people. Because people, I think, today can detect if you're the real thing or not. They can see, well, this guy seems to be on top of his game, even though what he's saying may be a little upsetting to me. So maybe I should, you know, listen to that, because I can hear some core truth to what he's saying. And I think people who aren't living up to the game but saying it or saying something different than what they're doing, people detect that. And it's not just in astrology. It's in like every field today.
Yeah, and you have to establish trust before you can have communication. And then that's when you can share when you're in communication. That's very important. And you have an altruistic approach to what you're doing. And you hit on something that's very key that I think is very important to listeners of this program, is that you remember that what worked 5 years ago does not work now, may not work now. And, you know, I've heard people talk about psychology and business systems and so forth. And one of the things that is a consistent theme through many people that work in all different levels of counseling businesses or individuals is that what got you to success may not work to sustain your success. And then the failing comes with not changing, because people tend to put the best foot forward, and what got them to where they are, they tend to rely on, and then they don't change. So what was a virtue becomes a vice. Why would that be? Well, it's not just because you're in a different position, but it's also because times change. There's a story I heard from a guru, I forget his name, and he told the story of two men owned border properties, and underneath that property was a mine. And they found that there was gold in the mine. And then it was very difficult to determine under whose property it was because it seemed to coincide with the border of the property. Well, each one said, don't worry about it. The one said, it's yours. The other one said, no, it's yours. A few years later, what happens? They're winding up in court, and they're bitterly fighting with each other. It's my gold, don't you touch it, and vice versa. And so what happened? It turns out that the guru explains that the times had changed. Same situation, same men, but the times had changed. We've got to remember that our situations do change, but the times also change, even if we're in the same situation, and this is a time to adapt. So some of the people who are walking around stunned, I've felt that way. I've walked here in New York. I was came up days after 9/11, and I've been through things not as much as the people who live here all the time. But if you feel a state of helplessness because times change and you don't find yourself changing with it, I'm inspired by hearing the way William talked to our caller who came in before and said, just get out there and do something and take the initiative, because if you do, there are cycles, there are currents. Don't stay in a stagnant water. Don't let yourself get depressed and get stuck in the mud because there's a declining tide. Why? Because William is telling us that there are cycles moving in all directions, all around us, different speeds, different levels, so it's change. This show is the cycles of change, and so the world of interconnecting cycles and within cycles are telling us there are currents all around. Change, and you'll feel better. Adapt. Differentiate beyond your comfort zone, as Jung would say, and you could do that. And if you want more information about this, by all means, contact William Stickevers at williamstickevers.com. Stickevers, again, I'll spell that for you, STICKEVERS, williamstickevers.com. He responds to queries, I take it. He has a lot of information on his website where you can find out a little bit about the realms in which he's studied. And I'm very pleased to have had him on the program here tonight to help further my understanding. I knew this would be a rich experience when I had the pleasure of meeting you and hearing the good lecture you gave at the Meta Center on January 24th. By the way, folks, there is a video. William is in the video, as am I and Don Conroe, that was filmed January 24th, 2013 at the Meta Center. I've just gotten that mini DV from Alan and turned it over to Mitchell Raymond at A Better World TV. And we're going to be producing a video of that. It's going to be able to, you'll be able to view that online. William, I'll have a copy of that for you as well. So, William, and look for it at kalarhythms.org, K-A-L-A, rhythms.org, and use the search bar there to find William Stickevers, and that'll lead you to that video. Do you have any parting words for us here when we're in our final minute, William?
Well, I just really want to thank you and your audience for giving me the opportunity to have the discussion tonight about some very serious subject matter, which I know many of the things I said was controversial and maybe somewhat upsetting for those folks who want to believe this is just very temporary and it's going to go away and the good old days and we're coming back. I really wish that was the case. But I think this is the time when the human potential movement really is our time for people to step up to the plate, get out of their comfort zone, and to really begin to move forward with their lives. And the human potential movement is really going to take off in such very similar to what happened in the 60s. And I think that's what people need to look forward to, that there's going to be resources out there, and there's many resources now, but there'll even be more resources over the next few months, few years, that will really help them make better informed decisions, and not decisions based on the past, but decisions based on how the future is influencing the present.
My goodness, I think that's very well said, and words to the wise. Folks, Check out WhamStickEvers.com. Keep listening to the Cycles of Change radio program. William, I thank you not only as a host, but as a listener of this conversation. You've shared a lot that I find meaningful, and I think others will as well. I bid you a good night.
Good night, David. Thank you very much.
This is David Katzmeier from the Cycles of Change radio program, signing out until next week. Thank you for listening, and good night.